How's it going, Yankee fans? Welcome back to Fireside Yankees with your boys, Alex and Ryan. Today, we're talking about the back end of the starting rotation, and the Yankees obviously have some decisions to make with Gerrit Cole missing a couple of weeks here. They have to find a back end guy to really support the number five spot in this rotation. We know that Will Warren and Luis Gil, we're going to talk about in this episode, have been making a nice little impact during spring training against, again, it's important to note, spring training, grain of salt, we get it, and we want to talk about some of the encouraging pitch signs from Gil specifically, that, you know, coming off a couple of years of injury, he had Tommy John surgery, he only pitched four innings last year in the minor league level, and now he's finally back with the Yankees, and he is looking really freaking good. Like, good enough that he could fill the Johnny Brito role next year, and I think that that's realistic to consider. He could be a spot starter, he can help out of the bullpen. There's a lot of value to Luis Gil as long as he can stay healthy. I think, you know, Ryan, you and I are in the same boat here, thinking that they'll probably ramp him up, not have him start immediately. We think Will Warren will probably get the first crack, but as we get going through the regular season, Gil's value is going to rise. And I think Gil's impact is going to be quite significant. So I think we'll give you guys a little bit of a teaser here into what we're going to see from him. Velocity looks good. You know, the movement looks great. Ryan has a lot of pitch data from spring to give you guys in terms of what to expect from him and why he could be a really good arm. And then, of course, we'll talk for a couple of minutes here about Jordan Montgomery. The Yankees have reconnected with him, and maybe there's a deal to be had. We'll see what happens, how it materializes. But Ryan, before we dive into it, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great. You know, we get an opportunity to talk about, I think, one of the most exciting arms in the Yankee pitching staff, and that's Luis Gil. Now, Luis Gil, he's 25 and hasn't found consistent major league success, but that's not because he hasn't been a good prospect. That's not because it's not like a Davey Garcia, Esteban Florial situation where it's like, yeah, he's put up some fun numbers in AAA, but nobody really wants him on their major league team. Like, the Cleveland Guardians are going to throw Floyd out there in their outfield. They have one of the worst outfields in baseball, and he might not start every day. Davey Garcia's with the White Sox, and he's not even going to make their major league team. Again, one of the worst teams in baseball. So, you know, those kinds of players find themselves on those kinds of teams, and that's not an insult to them. I think it's just reading the tea leaves on their market value. Luis Gil's a different situation. Luis Gil hasn't gotten to the major league level consistently because of Tommy John surgery. I think without that Tommy John surgery, at this point in time, we're talking about at least a consistent reliever in this bullpen, if not at least a starting pitcher. He's found that changeup, and that changeup has kind of changed the entire conversation regarding Luis Gil, because if you ask me, okay, on March, let's say March 28th, right? March 28th or March 22nd, let's exactly go 1 month ago today. Do you think Luis Gil is ever going to be a starting pitcher? I would go, probably not. Like, never. Like, he doesn't have a third pitch. It's not going to work. I think the stuff is great and he'll make for a great reliever, but he'll never make it work as a starter. And then he added just a gross changeup. The thing is nasty. I mean, it gets over 10 inches of vertical separation off of his fastball, has a 45.7% whiff rate. What? That's gross. And that's going to help him against left-handed batters who have, historically speaking, not really been as fooled by his fastball-slider combination as they have now with that changeup in the mix. He can also throw that changeup to right-handed batters, and he's gotten swings and misses there. He's altered the shape of his slider, and I'm not saying that to say that it's improved. I don't know if the slider is better or worse, if I'm being honest with you. If you ask me honestly, I'd rather him still throw that sweeping slider, but if you look at kind of the history of those kinds of sliders, I'm not saying sweeping sliders make guys get hurt, but Severino talked about the slider being something that caused a little bit of a bark up in his elbow. Potentially Luis Gil's thinking, you know what, I've got a great fastball. The slider that I'm throwing now, it's got less, you know, horizontal movement, sure, but it's still a pretty good pitch. It's still getting a whiff rate of about 33%, and I've got a great changeup. I can get away with this. I just need to be healthy and be around the team and pitch, because whenever he's healthy and pitched, we've always been impressed. I mean, obviously his debut kind of predates you and I consistently doing this show, but I still remember the hype in 2021 when he came up, strikes out a billion guys, obviously had some ups and downs in his starts with the Yankees in 2021, but overall looked extremely impressive. And then he makes a start against Chicago. It doesn't go too well. His AAA numbers weren't that good, and it comes out that he tore his UCL. Was he probably pitching due to some elbow pain? Yeah, right? Like, you don't just, not that you don't just tear your UCL, but sometimes inflammation, soreness, things of that nature can occur before the UCL tear. I think that now that he's finally helping with that changeup, things are going to be nasty for him. He throws a high 90s fastball with great vertical movement. I compared his fastball to Gerrit Cole's in a graphic we posted on Fireside Yankees on the Twitter account. By the way, easy plug, you guys should follow us on social media. It's a one for one, right? The great vertical movement. If anything, Luis Gil's fastball kind of profiles a little bit better because it's the lower slot release, and he throws it a little bit harder, and it gets a little more vertical movement. So it's like if you took Gerrit Cole's fastball and kind of upped up a little bit, a tad bit, the qualities that make for a good fastball, which is a lower release height, good vertical movement, good velocity, stuff of that nature. We're talking about an 80 grade fastball. Like, I don't want to, you know, exaggerate a prospect, because prospects are prospects. Young players are young players. They're not going to be superstars in year one unless they're a generational prospect. And Luis Gil is not a generational prospect. This isn't, you know, Adley Rutschman or Julio Rodriguez, but that fastball is that good. And Alex, I think in a reliever role to open the year, perhaps, and then maybe transition to a starter's role if the need is there, or if he's built up, or potentially next year, I think that's the route for him. I view him as a future guy in this pitching staff, whether it's a reliever or a starter, for a very long time. And looking at the free agents the Yankees have coming up, Clay Holmes, Caleb Ferguson, Jonathan Loaisiga, and Tommy Canley, they're going to need guys to replace him in the bullpen. And Luis Gil kind of stands out as one of those guys immediately who could do that off the jump.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the Yankees need the support. Luis Gil, and look, the Yankees have had tremendous amount of success finding value in guys that are overlooked. You know, we've talked about Clay Holmes, talked about Ian Hamilton, Will Warren. We interviewed Will Warren. He is really good against right-handed batters. Against left-handers, he's working on it, getting better every single day. Today is a really big opportunity for those two, though. Hill's going to get the start today against the Mets in about an hour here. So if you're watching this, we'll probably already have some information on how he performed. And then Will Warren's going to back him up. So we're going to get a good, nice look at these two guys before the regular season starts in about 6 days here. So, you know, if I'm the Yankees, I'm thinking maybe you could platoon these two guys in starts. You know, maybe there's an opportunity for them to say, well, if Luis Gil pitches today and Will Warren comes in after a couple innings and they both look really good, maybe you could pair those two guys as like a de facto starter. Maybe they don't have to be like individuals. It could kind of be a combo package. Kind of a unique take. Teams don't necessarily do that all the time or rarely ever. But if they like those two guys and they play well off each other, you know, why not give it a shot? Could be kind of a different strategy to utilize, especially because they're both young. You both want them to get some action. And then you kind of ride with the hot hand, see who performs the best, and you kind of just give them the lion's share of the meal. I think that could be a strategy they implement going into the season. Right now, I'm not really optimistic the Yankees are going to be acquiring anybody. We'll talk about Jordan Montgomery here for a moment. You know, Montgomery, obviously, coming off a World Series with the Texas Rangers, was really, really freaking good last year after he was traded from the St. Louis Cardinals. I think the Yankees know what they're going to get in Montgomery, and they know he's not worth $30 million. He's him and Snell coming off their best season. You know, you're going to have to pay up. Montgomery's 31 years old, or going to be. I just don't see how you can justify paying him $30 million per season. I'm probably more so in the range of like 25 per season on like a shorter term deal. Maybe you're even lower than that than I am. He's not a big strikeout arm. You know what you're getting. You know, they kind of changed up the way he was pitching in terms of his pitch mix, his usage of certain pitches, which impacted his success, which was obviously, you know, favorable for him. And one of the reasons we traded him a couple years ago is because we didn't think he would be a really big impact pitcher for us during the postseason. He ended up being really good for Texas in the playoffs. He stepped up. He has that clutch factor. We now know that, which I think does give him a little bit more value. You know, what are your thoughts on Jordan Montgomery? I know it's not probable we're going to land him, but why do you think he would be a good fit for us right now? And what do you think a contract might look like? At this point, I think most Scott Boras clients are taking shorter-term deals with opt-outs at higher salaries. I just don't think he's worth $30 million per season.
Yeah, and I fully agree. He is not worth $30 million a season. He should not get the contract that Blake Snell got because he is not the pitcher that Blake Snell is. Now, there are a couple of interesting factors here. Number one, if he were to sign a deal, I think it's like literally the day after opening day, he doesn't qualify for the qualifying offer. I know it's a conundrum, but just follow me here. Doesn't qualify for it at the season's end. I believe if there's an opt-out, that also kind of affects it, and the Yankees can kind of tweak things there. But the big question is whether Jordan Montgomery will take a short-term deal or not, because he's not currently eligible for the qualifying offer and could be if you were to hit the market again. The qualifying offer is voided, or you're no longer qualified for it, if either one of two things happen. Number one, you're traded midseason. That happened to Montgomery. That's why he didn't get it in his first year of free agency. Or two, you've received a qualifying offer before, even if you haven't taken it, but a team has at least offered it to you. So it's a one-time thing, and that comes with draft compensation penalties for the opposing teams, stuff of that nature. Now, I'm pretty sure that the Yankees would also be in a situation where if they were to extend the qualifying offer and then lose a player because of their financial situation, they wouldn't actually, I don't think teams actually have to pay any compensation picks. It's a very weird clause. And so perhaps that would be beneficial for Jordan Montgomery to sign with the Yankees because they make so much, or they're going to spend so much money that teams won't have to lose draft picks to get him. They would still have to pay some international free agent money, perhaps, but I don't think they're going to have to give up draft picks. And again, that might entice him to actually sign with the New York Yankees. So from Montgomery's standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to go to the Yankees. They need him. They would guarantee him a rotation spot. He's familiar there. His wife is in Boston right now. New York isn't too far from Boston. So from a location standpoint, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. The thing is the finances, right? What are the Yankees going to be able to do with that luxury tax, that 110% tax on any dollar they spend? That'll make them want to either A, defer the money, kind of what they did, what the Mets did with J.D. Martinez, and what the Giants did with the signing bonus for Blake Snell. I think the Yankees should try to do something of that nature. We've seen multiple Scott Boras clients at this point do that, so it wouldn't be crazy to imagine that Jordan Montgomery would do that, especially if he's going to hit the market again and make even more money next year. Look, the Yankees need a starting pitcher. They could just have somebody step up, and that fills the void of needing a starting pitcher. Like, if Will Warren steps up, you don't need another starting pitcher externally, at least at that point in time, but you can't assume that. And also, other injuries can pop up. You can say, well, if Will Warren's very good, or if Will Warren's pretty good, they don't need a starting pitcher. Well, what if Carlos Rodon isn't that good? Or what if Nestor Cortez gets hurt? Or what if Marcus Stroman struggles? Or what if Clark Schmidt gets hurt or struggles, right? Like, there are so many other things that could happen. It's not like one position. We're not talking about third base or second base, where if Gleyber Torres is Gleyber Torres, I mean, we don't need a second baseman, right? If Anthony Volpe is what we think he can be, we don't need a shortstop. Like, it would be nice to have depth there, but your depth can be a terrible player. Like, Oswaldo Cabrera can be the backup shortstop. I'm not even saying Oswaldo Cabrera is a good player. I don't think he's going to be that much better than he was last year. I think he'll be solid, maybe. I don't know. But like, he doesn't have to be great because he's not going to be asked to play a ton. Your fifth starter, your fourth starter, your third starter, they're extremely important to your team. So, you know, you can never have too much pitching, and the only thing the Yankees would have to do is pay the 110% tax. There is no draft pick compensation that they have to give up. There is no, international free agent money. The Yankees would just have to give up money. And again, like, they're going to print money this year. This isn't my money. I know that Brian Cashman has to factor into that, and I'm not judging Brian Cashman for not signing Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery. That ultimately boils down to ownership, and I'm not going to kill ownership after they ran a payroll of over $300 million. I'm not going to kill either party here, but what I am saying is you guys should go after Jordan Montgomery. Like, yeah, like there's nothing else to lean on. It's just money. And it's clearly going to make you better. And again, the foundation of a playoff rotation here. Gerrit Cole, let's say you acquire a guy to be your number two at the deadline, or Carlos Rodon steps up to be that, or Jordan Montgomery is that. And then you have Rodon or whatever it may be. If you have Cole, Monty, and a bounce back Rodon, and then you add a starter at the deadline, that's a great rotation. That you're going to win a lot of games. It just Cole and Monty alone should win you a lot of playoff games. As you mentioned, we've seen that he can do in the postseason, and I think he can pitch deep into games. I didn't feel that same way about Blake Snell. I think Blake Snell's going to need a little bit of a ramp up, and I think that that's not going to benefit the Yankee bullpen. We just talked about, like, Luis Cia. What are they going to do there? Well, I mean, now you have a situation where, I mean, what if it's Monty for six innings and then Luis Cia to just close the goddamn game? I mean, that's gross. That's nasty. You're going to get guys out left and right, and those are two completely different looks. You've got a sinker ball with a great curveball and a good changeup versus a guy who's right-handed throwing 98, 99 mile per hour bullets through the zone. You can create a really nice and dynamic pitching staff that has a bunch of different looks. The only concern is really the three lefties. Rodon, Cortez, and Monty would be three lefties in your rotation. But between you and me, Alex, I mean, do we bet on both Rodon and Cortez being very good this upcoming season, and more importantly, being very healthy? Right, that feels like a risky bet in and of itself. If Cortez just isn't that good, cool, you have Monty. If Stroman just isn't that good, cool, you have Monty. If Rodon isn't that good, cool, you have Monty. Right, like it's a built-in insurance clause if one of your guys don't step up. And when Gerrit Cole comes back, you're going to be set. Your rotation is going to be great. And you can focus on maybe third base at the deadline or whatever it may be. Because third base is a disaster, Alex. I'm sorry. I don't care when LeMahieu comes back. That bone bruise, I feel like, can linger for a while. I'm concerned about third base. I look at third base and I go, that's one oversight of the offseason. They're going to have to figure that out. They don't have a reserve infielder. So I think a lot of focus needs to be poured there at the deadline. Montgomery just gives you insurance. He's such a good start. Just get it done. It's money. It's money. I know it's not going to happen, but it's literally just money.
I'll tell you one thing. If the Yankees win a championship this year, they're not going to be worried about money. They're going to be worried about how much money they have. You know, they're going to be looking at their checkbook saying, yeah, the extra, 100% tax, we made it back 1,000% fold. You know what I mean? It's going to be very lucrative. Yankee playoff baseball, not only are the TV networks paying out of their mind for those games, but you're also getting the concessions at the Yankee Stadium. That stadium is going to be packed to the freaking brim with people. Packed to the brim. They're going to have so much. They're going to be selling more food. They could feed half of Africa with the amount of food they're going to sell there. It's going to be insane to see the financial reward of having a damn good team. You know what I mean? And then they're going to have the money to go and get Juan Soto next year if they can do it. I mean, look, the truth is simple. This is all tax deductible for owners of teams, right? If you look at the NBA, Ryan, you might not even know this. Contracts in the NBA, you can deduct from your taxes up to 10 times. I think it's around some multiple of that. Or maybe it's between 2 and 10 times. Either way, it's more than one time. So if you're paying $30 million a year for Jimmy Butler, you actually get to write off $60 million. The tax breaks that owners of teams get are stupendous. Why do you think Steve Cohen bought the Mets? Because he's a Mets fan? No, because he's a freaking businessman and he wants the tax deductibles from owning the New York Mets because it brings so much economy boosting and value to the city, to the state, to the country. The write-offs are stupendous. I know, Ryan, I see your face right now. You're probably seeing something pretty impressive. They can afford it. Believe me, the tax deductibles they get from it, they're not worried about luxury tax threshold. It's something else here. I don't think it's that big of a deal. What do you have to say about it? I know you're reading something right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, not only just that, like, the other thing I was thinking, you know, you said, like, feed, like half of Africa. They could feed, like, an entire – they might be able to, like, fix whole world hunger with the money they can invest. Like, they might be able to fix that. Like, the Yankees have an unbelievable amount of money. I mean, we're not talking about, oh, yeah, they make – like, I understand stadium depths. There are a couple things there. They are still paying, I think, bonds on Yankee Stadium. That's a factor here. I understand that. But, like, they're going to make so much money this year. Like, I think they made $800 million last year. They're going to make – I mean, that's last year. Last year sucked. You know what I mean? Last year stunk. That stunk. It stunk so bad it hurt my throat to say stunk. I'm like a little bit concerned. Anywho, but they're gonna make a ridiculous amount of money this year, Alex. A ridiculous amount of money this year. And again, if they win the World Series, oh my goodness, you know how much money you're gonna make? And Monty can just opt out. And look, there is one risk here. It's that he doesn't opt out because he isn't very good. That could happen, and I recognize that. But that's why you would want a shorter-term deal. You'd want that insurance that, like, if he's bad, it's only for one more year. And if, you know, if you're talking about him just opting out, sayonara, Monty, love you, buddy. Go make your money. We're not going to give you that money, but go make that money somewhere else. Good job, my man. Like, I love Monty. Don't get me wrong. I want him to go make his bread, but that is not going to happen this winter. And then furthermore, as we kind of get into the financials of this, I mean, Alex, I'm not trying to sit here and say that, like, the Yankees owe anything to us. Like, technically speaking, they don't. Legally speaking, they don't. How much money does it cost to go to a Yankee game? How much money does it cost to get food? I'm not calling them cheap. They're not. Like, they spent $300 million this year. They are not cheap. This is not a cheap franchise. Hal Steinbrenner is not a bad owner. Like, there are bad owners, and it's not Hal Steinbrenner, right? But with that being said, come on. Like, he's literally, like, his mark. I'm not saying go out and sign a guy whose market is robust and everyone's in and get into the bidding. No, I'm talking about a guy who you can get below market value. I'm going to say, and this is kind of like my last thought here. Matt Chapman signed for $18 million a year for 3 years. Given what we know now about third base, that doesn't seem too bad for the Yankees. I'm going to call it a missed opportunity. They didn't believe in Peraza to be the backup infielder, and they didn't get a backup infielder. I'm sorry, that's a missed opportunity. Blake Snell ended up signing for 2 years, $61 million. If you told me in the beginning of the offseason that Blake Snell would have signed for that money, I would have told you, yeah, the Yankees should be all over that. Don't even get Yamamoto. Go get Snell for 2 years, because then you can set up your money to get Soto long-term, right? That is a deal. It is something you cannot get on the market usually. This is a discount. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to acquire a middle-of-the-rotation starter for a one-year commitment, and they're not old, and they're not broken. They're just not good enough to get a seven-year deal, and the entire market is being cheap. Take advantage. You got one guaranteed year of Juan Soto. One. Just one. That's it. That's all you got. You can sign him, obviously, after this, but that is not a guarantee. We talk about, shout out Fireside Bets. You know, we're talking about probability here. It's less than 100% that he plays for the Yankees next year. Why are we talking about setting up for the future, this and that. You get 1 year with Juan Soto. You're all in. I'm going to quote Skip Bayless here. All in my ass if we're talking about the finances and shit like that. All in my ass. Pause. My point is, it's an all-in year, right? It's an all-in year. He doesn't cost draft picks. I understand how important those are. He doesn't cost international free agent money. Considering Roki Sasaki might be a free agent next year, that's pretty important. He just costs tax dollars. Like, just get it. Like, I love Luis Cil. I know this is a Luis Cil episode, and Luis Cil is a good pitcher. But think, like, he's your seventh starter. Luis Cil's your seventh starter. This team's stacked if you've got that going for you. So let's just get this done. It's just money. How? Be the bread man. I'll pay $80 for a chicken bucket. Get it done. I'll pay $80 for a chicken. Charge us $90, $100. Just get this done.
Yeah, I'm 100% clipping that and posting that everywhere. We definitely feel a certain way about getting Jordan Montgomery. Yeah, the Yankees can afford it. And by the way, I was just reading about it while you're talking. Guy, if you buy a team, if you buy an MLB team, you can write off the entire purchase price from your taxable income. So if you're Steve Cohen, he didn't buy the Mets because he was a Mets fan. He bought the Mets because he got to write off the billions of dollars from his taxable income, right? That's why he bought the Mets. Not because he's a freaking Mets fan. He's a businessman first. Let's get that straight. The consolation prize is that he also gets to influence the Mets long-term financially. So it's crazy the amount of benefits that you get from owning a team. Steinbrenner is making money hand over fist. It's not even funny. $30 million to him is a drop in the bucket. It's not even worth looking at. I don't even get the obsession with the luxury tax threshold at that price. $300 million, he's making billions, maybe a billion a year from the Yankees. Over all the licensed products, all the international awareness, the TV deals, he's making more money than God could ever see. And we're worried about a $30 million investment in a pitcher. It's ridiculous to me. It really is. It's stupid. It almost is offensive because of how much we have to pay to go to games. And they're pinching pennies at the luxury tax threshold. It pisses me off, to be quite frank. But we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll make a move. I think they were willing to go for Yamamoto. They missed out on him. But they were willing to go well above that threshold. I think it just comes down to the right deal. And I think Montgomery's going to have to settle for a deal that's well below what he thought he'd get. And the Yankees might be able to get him for pennies on the dollar. Screw over Montgomery twice in the better course of 2 years. So we'll see what happens, guys. Always happy to hear your thoughts down below in the YouTube comment section. Make sure to like and subscribe, as always. And we'll catch you guys on the next Fireside Yankees episode.